Blog Talk Radio. Good evening. You are listening to the Words on Flick show on eWater Radio, KEWRDB. Welcome. Good evening. It is Thursday, June 6th. Welcome to the Words on Flick show, movie talk from a fan perspective with me, entertainment journalist, blogger, and movie fan Janine Coveney. Yes, it's time for another edition of Words on Flicks, and tonight it's just going to be me talking to you for, I don't know, maybe we'll make it to an hour, we'll see. Tonight, I think, you know, I wanted to talk about guilty pleasures, and I think this is a really interesting concept, and since I started the show last October, I've been trying to come up with different themes that relate to grouping movies together, thinking about film analytically, how they connect to one another, how they connect to us, and certainly it's a labor of love. Like I said, I've been doing it since last October, and I can't even believe that so much time has passed so darn quickly. I've always liked talking about movies, even when I was young, because I was always into narrative storytelling, and of course this is visual storytelling on the big screen, and you're alone in the dark, and you get to shut out everything else going on in your world, and just kind of get sucked into the big screen, and hopefully you get sucked in if the filmmakers are doing it right, and that's how you develop your sense of what you like about a film, what actors you like, what type of stories appeal to you, what film genres resonate for you as you're sitting there in the dark. And of course, now, today, we have so many different ways to enjoy film on the small screen. Hey, I've been watching film noir ever since I did the show about film noir a couple of weeks ago. I've been looking at film noir on YouTube because a lot of those films, the copyright is no longer enforceable. They are in the common, I forget what you call it, anyway. So I've been watching them on my phone. That's the point. Like, I could just lay in bed, look at movies on my phone, and people have been able to do this for a while. But it's still the same experience. You're still trying to look and hear and put yourself into that scenario. And, you know, it can be enjoyable. It can make you think. It can kind of stimulate your thoughts about certain events and issues. Or it can just be sheer unadulterated fun. And kind of that's what I want to talk about. And that was also kind of like the purpose of doing Words on Flicks, to talk about the impact of the stories, about the craft, but also about the relationship of movies to our real lives. Are they purely art, or do they have an impact on how we think about issues and events? And also, just as an art form, do we consider ourselves consumers of art, or is it populist entertainment? And, you know, should we have standards about what we choose to watch or not? And certainly in your taste and what it is that you like in a story, you're exercising your you know, your taste level, what it is that you prefer, your preferences. That's what I'm trying to say. So last week, I spent some time talking about musical biopics with my colleague and special guest, A. Scott Galloway, and I certainly hope that you caught that show because we had another one of our epic conversations, although he did comment later that I was kind of keeping him to the script so that the conversation didn't wander too far, but there were some points that I wanted us to get to in talking about the biopics. But we were talking about the upcoming, at that point, upcoming release of the Elton John musical fantasy bio, Rocket Man. And that just got me thinking about movies that you just gut level enjoy. You know, movies that make you shiver inside with glee and you're just like eating it up with a pudding spoon. You know, those movies that you get lost in, you relate to, you feel on some visceral level, you relate to the hero, you have some kind of aha moment, or you get some new insight into the life of the main character, or you get insight into your own life. Now, I really like musicals and movies about people who make music, creative people. And, you know, that made the Elton John Rocket Man like the perfect thing for me, even though I think some people weren't ready for it to be like a musical. Like if you compare it to Bohemian Rhapsody, the film about Queen that came out earlier this year, as you're watching the Bohemian Rhapsody, you're getting the story basically of Freddie Mercury. And when you're hearing the music in the film, it's because he's performing it in the same time, you know, analogous, you know, what am I saying? Synonymous to what's actually happening in the film. Whereas in Rocket Man, you're getting Elton's songs interpolated into the film at various points, almost as a stage musical experience. They're underlying the action that's happening and they're being performed for you, but not in a sort of a real time way. And so, you know, you see the songs taken out of sequence to the chronology in which they occurred in his career. But that's okay. That was okay to me. Now, some people had a problem with it. They're like, oh, that's not really his real life. That didn't happen that way. And yeah, that's true. But you have to take this movie as a piece of art on its own merits. And what was presented and how it was presented was engaging. And when I enjoy something, be it music or dance or a film, it's a weird thing. And I know some people get this phenomenon too. It's not just me. The hairs on their arms will stand up. Like they'll get chills. That happens to me a lot with music. Like I know something is good if the hair on my arms stand up. And so I got that experience several times during Rocket Man. So I'm just sitting in my seat, and yes, I went to the movies alone most often. I go to the movies alone more than I go to the movies with other people. And maybe some people find that surprising. I don't know. I guess it's fairly common now. But I've been going to the movies by myself since I was, a teenager. I would just plunk down my money, buy my ticket, and stroll on in there. I also had, you know, I've never had problem eating alone in restaurants or going anywhere alone, like unless it's not safe. Like I don't like to go anywhere where it's not safe. But anyway, to get back to the point. So me alone in the theater watching Rocket Man, your girl Janine, I'm actually singing. I'm rocking in my seat. I am watching early on in the film, it's kind of like a production music and dance set piece where he's singing Saturday Night's All Right for Fightin'. And suddenly you see him in this carnival atmosphere. He's dancing. There's dancers around him. The camera is kind of tracking him across this carnival and then plunks him down into the next scene of his life. And that was delicious, delicious, okay, to me, but maybe not to others. So, you know, and also in the film, there's a scene, you know, he's young. His mother is kind of self-absorbed. His father is withholding, and he sings I Want Love, which is a song that I don't believe came out until the 90s. And it's a song that I always enjoyed because it really speaks to the experience of, you know, trying to find love as you get older and you're trying not to get jaded and you want love on your own terms, which isn't always realistic. But it's a great song. But it's also a very sophisticated song for a young boy to be singing. But in the context of we know that it's Elton and we know everything that he is going through in that moment and everything he's about to go through in his life, it makes a really profound statement to have him sing that song in that moment. So I enjoyed the movie. And, you know, that's the long and short of it. So as I was watching it, it really started me thinking about movies that we enjoy and we tell people about, but then there's movies that we enjoy that are absolute guilty pleasures. So, you know, the films that you love, but you don't necessarily like admitting it out loud to too many folks for any number of reasons. But I think there still remains some, I don't know, there's either even a dislike or a misunderstanding of the phrase guilty pleasures. And I'm finding this out because I have a Facebook page, the Words on Flicks Facebook page, where I usually post what's going on with the podcast, what the theme is, who the guest is, and we'll post about different things related to movies and get people to respond. And this week I asked the folks in the Words on Flicks Facebook page group to post their favorite guilty pleasure movies. And some of the responses were really fun, and people explained why these particular titles were their guilty pleasures. And I really enjoyed reading the responses I got. But in reading them, it was really, you know, it was really a trip because I got the sense that some people had a different understanding of what the word, of what the term guilty pleasure actually means. There was a particularly a response from one member who shall remain nameless, who didn't like the term guilty pleasure and needed it to be defined. Like, what the heck does that mean? What does guilty pleasure mean? On a totally unrelated page, not the Words on Flicks page, but it was just coincidental, I believe, that another Facebook friend posted that he's baffled when supposedly smart people use the term guilty pleasure. So I thought, well, I guess I'm not as smart as I think I am because I use the term guilty pleasure. So what makes a film a film? A guilty pleasure. In my mind, it has to do with appropriateness to who you are, cheesiness, you know, political incorrectness, maybe poor production values, bad acting, bad script, bad taste, but you still like it, you know. Like, if you tell me you love Howard the Duck and it was the best movie you've ever seen, and there is like this big, I don't even think it's animated, I think it's a person in a duck costume walking around in this movie. And this movie has been, you know, acknowledged by critics to be like one of the worst movies ever. But you tell me you think it is brilliant, it's genius, and you love it, and you have no facetiousness. You're not being sarcastic. I'm going to give you some side eye over that. I'll be honest, you know. So that's what I'm talking about when I mention guilty pleasure. But I think some people view the term, like if they're watching a movie that they really love, for whatever reason, they love it, but they feel guilty that they're taking the time to watch it again. Or, you know, it's taking them away from something else. Or they love it so much that it makes them feel guilty. I don't know. Because some people were naming movies that everybody loves or that have been acknowledged to be critical hits or, you know, Academy Award winning movies. So if you love this Academy Award winning movie and it is universally hailed, how does loving it or deriving pleasure from it give you guilt? That's what I'm trying to squeeze from people. Like, I'm trying to understand how they associate that with guilty pleasure. Maybe it's guilty to them because they've seen it so many times. Maybe that's where the guilt comes in. I'm just working this out for myself right now. Maybe that's where the guilt comes in. They've seen the dang movie so many times that they know that sitting down and watching it for the 50th time is just, it defies logic. You know, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I'm going to go with that. So for this week's Words on Flicks, I'm going to dive into guilty pleasure flicks, and I'll share a few of mine in a minute. Okay, you are listening to the Words on Flicks show with me, Janine Coveney, on Thursday, June 6th. We're talking about guilty pleasure flicks, movies that you enjoy, but you've got a little flick of guilt as you watch it. Guilty pleasures. Okay, so our culture is pretty judgy. Let's face it. We are. We say that we're not, but we are. And particularly, you know, everybody has an opinion and a critique, and, you know, everybody's opinion is valuable. But certainly we value the opinion. Sometimes we value the opinions of our friends over our parents, or we value the opinions of movie critics. I like to read the critics. I don't always agree with the reviews that the critics write, but I like to see what they're saying, you know, about a particular film. And every once in a while, there'll be a film that comes down the pipe that I'll say to myself, I don't want to see any of the reviews first. I don't want to see any of the reviews first. I want to experience it for myself and then see what they say. But every once in a while, I like to be a little forewarned, because sometimes forewarned is forearmed, right? Okay. I don't mind. I'll see what they say and then go, oh, I see what they're saying. Or I'll think, oh, didn't that reviewer say it was awful? It's not awful. They just don't get it. They're not the right age. They're not the right, ethnicity. They're not the right... you know, whatever demographic pool to get what this filmmaker is trying to say about this film. Like, I talked to somebody recently, we were talking about the film that Jonah Hill directed, and he was saying that he loved that film. It was called Mid-90s. Like, he really got that film. And I'm like, that film just left me kind of scratching my head. Like, it was, you know, well-produced and whatever, but I didn't, you know, I was like, this is, it's not a good film. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, I understand some of the messages, but it, to me, it was kind of pat and self-absorbed, whatever. So in that moment, I got, I am the wrong gender. I'm the wrong age. I grew up in the wrong coast to really feel this coming of age film. And certainly coming of age films have, you know, similar beats and themes in them when you have a kid facing the realities of adult life and just that innocence, that veil of innocence gets stripped off. That is common to all coming of age films. But hey, the film wasn't for me. So, you know, that film isn't my guilty pleasure. So all of this is to say we all have our own idea of what makes a great film, right? But he and I, you know, we were going to argue about it for a minute until I finally came to that conclusion. Okay, well, it wasn't for me. So, and Hollywood knows that there are different demographics to which it is pitching its films, right? So we already know that independent, for the most part, not always, independent and foreign films, for the most part, are seen as catering to a discriminating, sophisticated crowd and intellectual group. Those films are mostly released in New York and LA, which are the biggest markets, and tend to have people there who support independent film more, foreign film more, right? Maybe not so much in Podunk, maybe not so much here where I am in Southern Virginia. I don't get to see a lot of foreign and independent films here because they're not screened here. The big tentpole franchise films like the Superhero Fair and action films, those are supposed to be for the mass audience, right? The largest possible group across most demographics. They're going to appeal to old, to young, to male, to female. Then, you know, most but not all animated fare, mostly directed at kids, right? But these days, animated films have become so sophisticated, you know, you've got jokes for the adults as well as the kids, that their appeal is broader. But, like, I'm looking forward to seeing The Secret Life of Pets 2, okay? I admit it. You know, people might say, oh, really, Janine? Yes, I like those films. Okay, so there's a little bit of guilt in there. Why? Because I am not the target audience for that, right? Okay, so there's also like these raunchy teen comedies, and you have like the rom-coms that are mostly pitched at women. So there's all these different genres, right? So if there are movies that you like that fall within those genres that are targeted to you, you don't have any problem saying, hey, I love this movie. But then maybe you might like something that's kind of outside of your demographic or what the stereotype of your demographic would expect you to enjoy. And then there are movies among them that you low-key like, right? And if pressed, you know, you'll admit, I like that. I like that. The other thing about the guilty pleasure is that some people don't understand the concept of guilt, right? So in our, you know, you only live once, do what you want, be yourself, never apologize, you know, they never feel guilty about anything. So maybe that's another misunderstanding about what a guilty pleasure is. Why should I ever feel guilty about enjoying what I enjoy. You know, I said it, I meant it, I'm here to represent it, and I like that movie. Like, there's, you know, I'm not really a proponent of violence in any form. I don't like guns. When people are around me who say they own guns, there's something in me that shies away, and maybe that's just my naivete. I was brought up with bougie middle-class values. Nobody in my family went hunting. Nobody in my family, even though we didn't live in the best neighborhood, nobody in my family was packing a gun to, or at least that I know of. I know my dad was a cab driver and a limousine driver for a while. I wonder, you know, I don't know. I'll ask him if he ever kept a piece in the car. But anyway, I'm getting away from the point. I don't like violence. But let me tell you, I love Kill Bill. Okay? Uma Thurman, the blood is just slash, 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 stab, stab, slash, stab. And I'm okay with it. I'm here for it. I mean, like, I think it's a part one or part two when she literally goes into the Japanese restaurant and she's severing limbs, you know, left and right, and blood is spurting everywhere. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Okay. So maybe I'm not supposed to like that, but I do. And it's a guilty pleasure because if I see it on television, I'm probably going to watch it. Okay. But there's a twinge in me that goes, I probably should not like this because, you know, it's violent. So talking about things that are outside of maybe your genre or what, you know, others would expect you to like, you know, if you're an over 50 female and you love American Pie or one of those other raunchy teen boy comedies, you might feel like you're going against the grain and you might only tell a couple of people that, you know, if American Pie is on or Superbad is on, that you're going to get out a tub of popcorn and watch it on the couch by yourself. You might not want to tell too many people that. I don't know. Maybe you don't care. If you're a 20-year-old heterosexual male who cries at The Notebook, which is a classic weepy rom-com, romantic comedy, do you share that with your friend? Like, yo, man, yeah, that The Notebook, that just gets me, man. Like, ugh. I don't know. You know, maybe that's a guilty pleasure for you or not. Or you're a 20-year-old heterosexual male today and you're living for Xanadu with Olivia Newton-John from the 70s where people are skating around this disco universe. I don't know. Which isn't to say that these movies don't have something likable within them. They speak to us. Maybe they don't speak to others within our demographic group or among our friends, but they speak to us and we should enjoy them. Why not? You know, feel the guilt and watch it anyway, you know? The other thing about guilty pleasures that occurs to me, it has to do with, again, the demographic thing, but also your ethnicity and your gender, right? Excuse me. I'm an African-American female. I'm an Afro-American Caribbean Latina female who's a, you know, super grown, extra grown, okay, full grown. And since I was a kid, I've watched films where white people were the default. I mean, that's just how it's been in Hollywood, how it's been in this country. The white people have been the protagonists in all of the main feature films. And of course, that's been changing over the years. And we certainly have some African-American film classics going back to the Oscar Micheaux filmography. But, you know, the movies that most of us know here in America, the Academy Award winners, the films that are sort of like the touchstones for American culture, they are primarily helmed by white heroes, white heroines. And we've accepted that. And many of these movies are our favorites. Certainly, we love them. These films are favorites. But every once in a while, you know, you have to kind of let a comment or an image kind of go by you, even when you know that the film's politics or, you know, or the character's views are not really favorable to you. Okay, so one example I'll give of that is the Godfather films, Godfather 1 and 2. Everybody loves The Godfather. I know very few people who don't love it. Well, a couple of people have said to me they don't get it. And I even know a couple of people who've never seen it. And, of course, my reaction is one of abject horror. Like, what? You've never seen The Godfather? I mean, okay. So this movie is iconic, certainly. But within the film, the N-word is used, and I'm not going to say it here. It's a word that I don't use, and the word makes me uncomfortable. And I know that I've even had friends and some people within my family feel that I'm naive or just being a pill because I don't use the word. I object to the use of the word, and you know, I'm just being a Pollyanna about it. But I don't want that word within my universe. But where it shows up most often is on screen. So within The Godfather, they utter the word. And certainly it's true to the characters and the setting of the film. It's a mafia family in the 1930s and 40s in New York. Okay? So one character even terms black people in Harlem animals. Animals with no souls, okay? They're animals, so let them lose their souls. You know, it's a terrible statement. It's awful. It's reprehensible. It's true to the character. It's true to the times. And I still like the movie. But I have to tell you, every time it comes to that scene, I go, oh, yeah, I forgot that they say that, you know? And so there's going to be films where that comes up. Certainly, there's dozens of examples of racist statements, actions, statements, caricatures of people of color, people of you know, Latin and Jewish descent, and we let them go by so that we can continue to enjoy the film. Now, one of the films that the people on the Words on Flicks Facebook page added to the list of their guilty pleasures, and there were many, 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 but I'll just point this out, is Blazing Saddles. Now, Blazing Saddles is, I mean, of course, I'm sure you've seen it. It is a satire. Is satire the right word? On the Western, and it stars Cleavon Little as a black sheriff who comes to this town. And of course, you know, racism is a big issue. So there's a lot of racist jokes. There's a lot of sex jokes. And a lot of people commented, well, this is certainly a film that would never be made today. You know, even though it's a comedy, it would never be made today because it is so inappropriate and politically incorrect. And yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe that's true. Maybe Mel Brooks had license back in the 70s to make all of these inappropriate jokes that wouldn't stand today. I don't know. People say a lot of inappropriate things today on film, you know, that it seemed to me to be much worse. Nobody in Blazing Saddles is wearing blackface that I can think of right now. Nobody's shuffling. Certainly the point of that movie is that Cleavon Little as the black sheriff is a shining example of doing good, of being really clever, of having skills, as being more than what those little townspeople expect him to be. And damn it, he looks fantastic in his suede, riding in on his golden palomino to I Get No Kick from Champagne. But anyway, I digress. That kind of film might not be made today. Okay, another example. I still enjoy the drama and excess and all of the terrible Civil War history of Gone with the Wind. I mean, we've gone back and forth on Gone with the Wind in terms of its depiction of the relationship between enslaved Africans and, you know, rich Southerners, and how the war impacted their lives, and how whites and blacks related to each other in terms of being family, even though the people of color were in subservient roles. But it's a parody by now, this movie. You know, we can't help thinking of the Carol Burnett parody that she did on her show, and you can watch it on YouTube. I forget what it's called, The Wind. Anyway, regardless, it's a parody by now, and we can all recite all of the lines, particularly from poor stereotyped Hattie McDaniels' mammy and Butterfly McQueen. I don't know nothing about birthing no babies, even though she said she knew how to birth some babies. But I still love it. I'll watch it. What can I say? It's, you know, it's over the top. I also love Ingrid Bergman movies. She's one of my favorite actresses from the 1940s, 50s period, because Ingrid, she knew how to put everything on her face. And she was really good at love scenes. Like when she was playing somebody in love with a man on screen, she just gave it her all. You could just see that she was totally in love with that person. She's so good. Anyway, so there was this one movie that she did with Gary Cooper. I don't remember what year it came out, but it's called Saratoga Trunk. I don't know if you're familiar with it. I don't see it on TV that much anymore because of one particular factor, and I'll tell you what that is. Like I said, I first saw it on TV as a kid, and I was in love with it. It was one of those epic novels of the times. I think the novel might have come out in the 1930s or something. Epic novel adapted to the screen about the late 1800s when the railroads were being built across the country. And so Saratoga Trunk does not refer to, you know, somebody's baggage as a trunk. It had to do with a branch of the railroad that ran through Saratoga, New York. Okay, but the objectionable part is this. Ingrid's character is a Creole woman from New Orleans who comes to this town to seek her fortune, I guess, a fortune and a husband. She travels with two domestics, a dwarf servant. And I think that might have been the first time I ever saw a little person on screen. And he's French. And a black maid who is played by a white character actress in brown face. Brown face. And also she's like super ugly. I don't know if she has like a net, like a hair net on her head, or like she's got some like horrible black crease on her forehead. She's just hideous looking, and she's just dour, and she goes everywhere with this Ingrid character. And much is made of the fact that Ingrid's character has some black blood in her in the movie because she's from New Orleans. Okay, but the whole brown face issue is despicable. I mean, not only is she in brown face, she's portrayed as like being so ugly and forbidding and just black and ugly, like black and ugly, which is a horrible stereotype, right? So, but I was fascinated by this character. I mean, Ingrid Bergman is traveling with this black woman and she's in the movie. She's got a black woman and a dwarf. And as a kid, I just thought, you know, that's amazing. Like, I want to see more about these characters. I've never seen characters like this on the screen. Where is New Orleans? Where do they have people like this? Why are they like this? And in fact, the dwarf servant ends up sort of sacrificing his life as part of the struggle over the railroad situation. Anyway, see, now I got to go see if I can find this movie and watch it. Even though it is politically incorrect, I still like it. Help me, y'all. Convince me that I shouldn't. It's a guilty pleasure, and I still enjoy it. In fact, there's a scene where Ingrid Bergman, you know, she sleeps into the room at this hotel, and she's trying to charm all the men, and all the women are like, oh, that horrible woman from New Orleans, you know about her mother, right? Oh. And so somebody comments to her, oh, and, you know, you're so beautiful. And, you know, of course she is. And she says, I know. Isn't that lucky? I love that line. Anyway, look, the movies are made for entertainment and enjoyment. If they make you relax, if they give you joy, if they make you laugh, then for whatever reason, you should still enjoy it. Even though you might have to defend your choices later, I'm telling you. Abrupt. I'm sorry, y'all. First it was loud, then it stopped all crazy. What can I tell you? I need a staff. I need my own producer. I need an engineer. I need a booker. Like, I'm trying to do all this stuff myself, so forgive me. I just needed a moment to take a breath. I hope you won't begrudge me that. So we're talking about guilty pleasure movies. So moving on with that idea, you know, sometimes we enjoy them because we need the comfort. We just need the comfort of these films to get us through the tough times. We enjoyed them once, you know, they're already familiar to us. They take us into a world within that film that where we want to go. We want that fantasy. We want that setting, wherever it is. We want to visit with those characters again. We've seen the movie already because that's part of the guilty pleasure. You've already seen the movie, so you want to see it again. We already know how the film ends. There's no surprises to it. So you're just going to go along for the ride because you love it so much. It makes you feel good. It makes you think about things you want to think about. It helps you look at images that bring joy to your eyes, maybe. Just you love the whole mise-en-scene of it, you know. Or maybe the film reminds you of when you first saw it. You know, where you were, how old you were, who you saw it with. And in these troubled political times, hey, I live in Virginia Beach. I'm sure you heard of the mass shooting that was here last week. And, you know, too often, these incidents are happening way too often in our schools, in public places, in churches, places we feel safe. I had the chutzpah, the temerity, the arrogance to think, well, that would never happen in little old Virginia Beach. But it did happen. And fortunately, everyone that I know is safe, but I do mourn for the people who lost their lives. I mean, it's horrible. You're just going to work. You're going about your daily life. You don't expect that that's going to be the day that you meet your maker. So this community is mourning. You know, people here have been really affected by it, and people are talking about it. And, you know, just mentally, we like to check out. We need comfort. We need comfort food. We need comfort people. We need comfort images and comfort stories. And those come to us through film, without question. It's a comfort to us. But still, sometimes that comfort comes from unlikely places. Sometimes the ongoing discussion when it comes to guilty pleasures, particularly in film, is when we find out that the directors or the producers have, or even the actors in them, have broken the law, done insidious, horrible, reprehensible things. And I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. We were talking about Annie Hall, written and directed by Woody Allen. Still one of my favorite movies about love. So do I now disavow Woody Allen movies because Woody has been accused of sexually assaulting his young daughter? You know, because he married his own stepdaughter? You know, I still enjoy the movie. It's got great jokes, great visual puns. It makes some really informed jokes about what love is. And, you know, I always quote that part of the movie, and he's quoting, I think Woody is quoting Groucho Marx, I can't remember, but the joke is, I wouldn't want to belong to a club that would have somebody like me for a member. And that refers to all of our insecurities when we get into a relationship. Like, why do they like me? Why do they want to be with me? There must be something wrong with them if they want to be with me, right? Hey, the film Manhattan, another Woody Allen film, which is beautifully shot. Like, the black and white is just glowing, and it's a love song to, you know, Manhattan itself, to New York City. But here he is in the movie. I believe he's already over 40 in this movie, and he's having an affair with a 16-year-old girl. Like, it's nothing. Like, it's, you know, standard. Like, that's standard operating procedure. Older men date teenage girls all the time. And, I mean, I know it's a reality. It was a reality at that time. There were girls in my high school that were dating older men. And, but it's not right. Girls in high school are children, you know. There ought to be a law, and I'm sure there is. I still enjoy Woody Allen. I enjoy James Bond movies. They are mindless entertainment. They move fast. They have so many different characters. I love Sean Connery because that's like peak James Bond when he was at his most sexist. You know, James Bond just swoops in, and whatever woman is available, he just grabs hold, you know. I like Pierce Brosnan as well. What can I say? I kind of like Piercy. James Bond. I think some people would think, well, wow, Janine, you like James Bond movies? Yeah, I do. They, you know, like I said, they're fast-paced. They've got, you know, the latest technology to that time in them. They're usually good to look at. They are a travelogue around the world. And what's not to like about that? You know, whatever. It's sexist. I still like it. You know, we women have been dealing with sexism all our lives. We've had to, you know, swallow it down. We've had to get over it. We've had to deal with it. We're glad that maybe there's more awareness today, that movies don't indulge in as many gender stereotyping and sexist tropes as they did in the past. But we've learned to deal with it on film. So there you have it. Another guilty pleasure of mine is animated Disney films. Walt Disney himself has been accused many times of being racist, a racist, anti-Semite, and also a sexist. But hey, his film studio made super breakthroughs with animated film and with entertainment for children. I grew up watching The Wonderful World of Disney every freaking week. I thought Disneyland was such a magical, wonderful place. It seemed like another planet. They were constantly showing it to you on the Wonderful World of Disney. I lived in New York. I was a kid who grew up in the South Bronx in New York. What did I know of Disneyland? I was just looking at pictures the other day for my 40th birthday when I lived in Los Angeles. Some friends got together and surprised me and took me to Disneyland. I had never been. Can I just tell you that I cried like the 7-year-old I still was when we got to Disneyland? I was so excited to be there. It had been a dream of mine since I was a kid, and I ate it up with a spoon. So I still adore watching Fantasia, The Sword in the Stone, Bambi, and even some of the more contemporary Disney animated films. And maybe I'm not supposed to like them, but I do. And maybe I'm not supposed to like them not only because of Walt Disney's history, but also because I'm grown. You know, like I'm super grown. I remember a couple of years ago, my niece and I, who's also grown, come to think of it, we sat down in my living room when I lived in the D.C. area, and we watched the animated film Rio. Oh, my gosh. We had such a good time. I mean, that was like peak viewing for me. I wasn't watching it ironically. I wasn't watching it like, okay, if that's what you want to watch, I'll watch it. I was watching Rio, enjoying all the animation. The flight sequences are beautiful. And also, it's set in Rio, and they did so much research to make sure that it looked super realistic. And they had the culture incorporated. So you've got Brazilian music. There are scenes in the carnival and just the whole thing. And it was just cute as it could be. It really was. And see, I'm getting all worked up even talking to you about the anime. I like animated films in general. Did I mention at the top of the show that I'm going to see the Secret Life of Pets 2? I am. What can I say? I also like The Incredibles. So, but there's so many films, and you know, people still love them. People love Dirty Dancing. People love Four Weddings and a Funeral. I love Four Weddings and a Funeral. Another friend of mine loves Baby Boy. She was saying that, she's seen that movie super many times on, in the theater and on TV. She just felt like she knew all of the characters, and it spoke to her so much, and she never gets tired of seeing it. And I get that. You know, if it speaks to you, you want to keep going there. You want to visit with that movie. Another friend, really loves Claudine. I love Claudine. Hey, to me, there's nothing guilty in enjoying that movie. But maybe for some people it is. It's a movie about a woman who's a domestic, who's on welfare, who is cheating welfare by having a man come in. There's so many sort of stereotype tropes about what living in the ghetto is, Harlem in the 70s. But there's something real about that movie, too. These are real people trying to have a real relationship. And it's a wonderful movie, and it has great music in it. So what's guilty about that? Of course, I mentioned Blazing Saddles. Some people like really trashy movies. Some people still love all the John Hughes, the 16 Candles, and what was the other one? Pretty in Pink. I like Pretty in Pink. What can I say? Another friend mentioned Desperately Seeking Susan, and okay, I get it. I like Patricia Arquette. It wasn't about Madonna for me. I like Patricia Arquette. Love and Basketball came up because it reminded my friend about her first love and how they related. People love Fame, the movie Fame. I loved Fame. What's not to love about that? How are you guilty to watch a movie about high schoolers who are interested in the arts? Nothing guilty about that. But there's other movies that are less popular, and, you know, you might not want to tell people that you, you know, again, Howard the Duck or, you know, I don't know. There's so many films out there, and you should enjoy what you enjoy, right? There's so many films out there and so many opportunities for us just to sit back, enjoy them. You don't have to tell everybody. You don't have to share it, you know? You don't have to defend it if you don't want to. Just, you know, get your favorite drink and your popcorn and let the movie take you. Why not? Don't feel guilty. And that's my take on guilty movies for this week. So just to wrap up the show, Ma with Olivia Spencer came out this past week. Now, I'm torn on this one because, of course, Olivia Spencer, great actress. I'm so glad to see her getting more opportunities to appear in movies where she's not the second banana. She's not the brown best friend. But I don't really like this particular genre of film. And you remember, I don't know if you remember, the struggle that I had in going to see Us. So it's going to take me a minute to get into the theater. And just as I did with Us, I think I need somebody to hold my hand. I was explaining that I go to the movies alone a lot. I don't know if I can go to this one by myself. I might walk out if I go by myself. Because I don't really like scary horror films. I remember way back when I was in college, a bunch of us went into town, into Boston, late at night to see Dawn of the Dead. I didn't know what it was about. I just thought, hey, I'm going with my friends. I don't know anything about this movie. I literally ran out of this movie, you know, within 10 minutes of it starting. When they started bashing, you know, zombie skulls open, I'm like, no, the girl can't do it. And I'm afraid that that might be what this will do to me. And also because of the racial element, I mean, yay, Olivia Spencer is starring in a movie. Boo, you got a black woman terrorizing white teenagers, as if, you know, we need to have any more racial animus between us. But I guess, you know, equal opportunity, we got to take the good with the bad, right? Another film I'm looking forward to seeing, and I hope it comes here. It might not, though. It's called The Last Black Man in San Francisco. I'm going to see, I'll be in New York in the next couple of weeks, and that's going to be on my list of things to see. It looks like a really wonderful, artsy kind of Valentine to the city of San Francisco. Oakland's been getting love from black filmmakers for the last couple of years, but now this one looks really fascinating. And of course, speaking of guilty pleasures, what can I say? I like Quentin Tarantino. I know he's been getting a lot of flack for his liberal use of the N-word in film, and I get that. I'm among those people. I'm looking forward to seeing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but it doesn't open until July. So I'm going to have to wait. So thanks for listening to this week's edition of Words on Flicks. Thanks for letting me ramble at you for an hour about guilty pleasures. The next show will be in 2 weeks. I'm now on a 2-week schedule. So the next show will be Thursday, June 21st. Not sure what the theme will be then. It'll either be fathers on film in commemoration of Father's Day, or dysfunctional families, which also includes fathers gone bad. So until then, I wish you a fantastic weekend, and keep watching, and keep watching out, y'all. Good night. Bye-bye.